Hello, and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about the collected editions from the galaxy's greatest comic, 2000 AD. I'm Eamon Clark, and for this episode, I'm joined from the 1977 to 2000 AD Facebook group, Ben Cullis, a.k.a. Ben KC, the mystery figure. Ben, welcome to the podcast.
Good evening, Eamon, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great to have you on. I know we've been trying to get this organised, but here we are. And we're going to be talking about a great Dread book in a moment. But before we do that, we start, as ever, with 2000 AD origin stories. So your background with the prog, when you first came across it, how long you've been reading it?
Yeah, so as a 10-year-old in 1977, my background had been reading Battle, Warlord, and Action Comics. The graduation onto 2000 AD was something which was seemed kind of natural. And as a huge fan of science fiction in my younger life, reading lots and lots of fantastic work since I was a very young lad. I mean, 2000 AD just something naturally that kind of struck a chord with me. And immediately I was, someone who was absolutely keen on that Saturday morning, going to the newsagents and picking up my prog and just reading through it and rereading it. And as an older kid, you know, starting to draw the characters and such like, I've always been fascinated in the style of the work involved, the characters contained within it. And for myself personally, I have a particular resonance with, I would say, probably the first 10 years progs. I was absolutely keen as mustard up to sort of about prog 500. Found myself after that probably buying it alongside a lot of other work, which I'm happy to talk about later. But basically, I was exploring the work from the original artists and creators who'd moved on from 2000 AD. So I graduated onto things like Swamp Thing and, you know, anything that Bolland did, anything that Gibbons was doing, or Gibson, or anyone else who'd started with the progs and was moving on.
Excellent stuff. And back with it again now?
Yes, I am indeed. I'm not buying every week, though, Eamon. The Meg I catch up on. I have an online subscription, which I pretty much saves me the space now of having to have all those extra progs, and I dip in when I have time. But yeah, I'm happy to say I'm a subscriber to Rebellion's 2000 AD, and I still have holes in my collection which I'm very eager to kind of purchase. So I'm still very much involved in filling up back spaces in my collection. And I've moved on only recently, though, to attending more conventions, meeting the creators themselves, particularly, I would say, the 40th anniversary bash down in London was, for me, a kind of reintroduction to the whole scene, if you like. It had been a dream of mine for, you know, a long time to meet these people. But for one reason or another, I wasn't able to do that. And hand in hand with that, I would say, I'm very much keen to sort of promote new and up-and-coming creators involving myself with our Facebook group, which we're happy to discuss in a little while. But obviously, you know, these days as well, I'm very aware that the original artists, the original creators may stop working, or in fact, obviously, as the last year has shown us, you know, are not with us one by one. So for me, it's a sort of bittersweet experience at the moment where I'm enjoying reading back through the catalogue, enjoying some of the work which is done up at the which has been presented at the moment, and obviously delighted that 2000 AD is still here. I mean, that's one thing. If you'd asked me as a 10-year-old, would you still be reading a comic called 2000 AD in the year 2019? That itself would have seemed like a kind of science fiction analogy in itself, really. So it's been a pleasure as a child through, you know, growing up and developing and actually still being interested in it. And I'm happy if people want to think that, you know, us who do that, if we're nerds or if we're, you know, just fanatics. But I like to see myself as a kind of connoisseur, really, of science fiction. And I'm really, really pleased to say that I think that 2000 AD is still up there, and it's still producing fantastic material, which I'm delighted in a very, very small way to be able to promote and just be involved with.
So let's turn to the book you've chosen for book club, and it's a real sort of almost defining book in a way from the last 40 years. It's a very important book. Tell us about it.
Okay, so I've chosen Origins, collected by Rebellion, and I see, looking to the notes, that it was from Prague 1500, which dated, it would be in 2006, and continued through to Prague 1535. And it's one of the longer collected series. I mean, what's not to love about it? You've got Esquerra, you've got Wagner at some of his finest work as well. And I love the prologue, which we'll discuss in a short while. I love the other covers which are included in it, and in the collected volume, which I refer to. It's just fantastic to see the whole package. But of course, Origins, as the name says, gives us so much more detail and information which any Dreadhead would, you know, who have been clamoring for, about the backstory of Fargo and the development of the megacity and the judiciary, and obviously Dredd's personal involvement in it through his DNA and his experience of the city. And it's just a fantastic read. If I was to be asked by anybody, if they were to say to me, what would you say as an introductory book, you know, I've started reading Judge Dredd, what would you say? I would pretty much give them Origins and maybe a couple of other shorter stories as well to fill them in. But I mean, for anyone who's an aficionado or just a fan of Judge Dredd, I mean, it's the complete package, and that's why I chose it.
Excellent stuff. So you've mentioned some of them already. Let's do quickly Creator Corner, because obviously written by John Wagner.
Yeah.
Kev Walker, yeah. Art, Carlos Esquerra. I think Chris Blythe did colours on the last two episodes of the Kev Walker prologue. Lettered throughout by Annie Parkhouse. Obviously, editor was Matt Smith. And yeah, we'll mention the front cover. We'll judge a book by the cover, because the front cover of The Trade, and it was the cover of Prague 1505, is by Brian Bolland.
That's right, yeah.
And it's a marvellous...
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm not torn between any of the artists in the collection. You know, you wouldn't ask me who's your favourite artist from the collection, because the whole thing works together so well. But that cover, it's just fabulous. I'm someone who admires Bolland's work so much. I mean, his craftsmanship, his draftsmanship, and just penmanship, although he's obviously now moved on to digital work, is something that's influenced me in my work all my life. And to see those characters there on the cover, and obviously we've got a fantastic reference to a much-missed Tom Frame. And I understand that obviously John and Carlos were, and to a lesser extent, I guess, the editorial team of 2000 AD were deeply affected by Tom's death not long before. And that's not really the feature of the actual, that's not the feature of the cover. We're harking back, are we not, to Mick McMahon's, is it Prague 62? Or one of those ones, the original Dredd on his Law Master, basically
61,
bursting,
I think,
from the cover of the comic. 61. Yeah, this is a little bit more contained. You know, guns aren't blazing. There's no threat necessarily, but the name Origins, and looking at that cover, these judges are off to do something. You know, they're embarking on something, and just the composition alone is fantastic. And you know, it's the old style, isn't it? It's the original uniforms, it's the original bikes, and the city is really only Bolland can do in kind of, you know, glorious monochrome and with the red sand of Cursed Earth just underneath them. I love it. I'm looking at it now, and it's one of those things which, hey, I would never be able to afford the front cover, but you know, you would give me that on a poster, I would buy that, and that would be on my wall, and it's just a fantastic image. So yeah, I'm glad you raised that. The actual logo itself, I'm not sure of the origins of that particular logo, whether that was contemporaneous with the 2080 Judge Dredd logo. You know, it's a different style itself, but it's got a lovely Eagle of Justice behind it. But the whole thing itself is just packaged beautifully. If not, of course, slightly reduced in scale, I guess. We're looking at a trade paperback, which is not the original size, but the actual quality doesn't suffer for it at all. I think it holds up extremely well. And, you know, it's a fantastic book. And I'm just very pleased to have it with me. So, you know.
Okay, marvellous. So it's got that great cover. This is, of course, was the 30th anniversary Dread story, the Dread epic for the 30th, with Matt Smith giving John and Carlos the chance to, give us a sort of, you know, for people who haven't read Origins, give us a brief outline of what the story is about. What is Dread and his team going to encounter in this story?
Okay, well, the story starts wonderfully. It kind of harks back, I think, to lessons learned in terms of storytelling technique and how we actually develop a story, maybe back to the relationship between Blockmania and the Apocalypse War, where we start with Orlok, and we're not sure, obviously, it's a threat in itself, the story there, you know, but then what it develops into. And I think Wagner has done such a brilliant story sort of telling technique here and bringing you in, and what is actually a fascinating story anyway. We don't know too much about the mutants who come into Mega City. They've got a box to deliver, and we have a voice which seems to come from under a coat, you know, is it Linus, the character that we'll meet after a few pages. And I love Kev Walker's work on this. I mean, it's just fantastic. I mean, it's raining, you know, it's raining in these opening pages, and it looks absolutely like, you know, it's awful weather. And it's nighttime, and the city is not full. We're on the outskirts of the city here, and we've got this little story carrying on, and then it opens up into Origins, and that is just fantastic. So the synopsis really, okay, I guess anyone who's followed Dread would appreciate the link between Dread and his DNA from the days of Fargo, where we learn that there is a case to consider whether is Fargo still with us. There's some DNA evidence, and the DNA evidence is pointing out that there's a timeline issue where it's not come from a time where Fargo would have been dead. We've considered him to be dead for some time. And then we have the kind of expose. The fact is that Fargo is not dead. And Dread gets to meet him. He's been dreaming in some way. There's a connection, obviously, with his clone father. He's been dreaming, and we've been privy to that. And there's the issue that we have the threat from the Cursed Earth with the raising of the New Mutant Army by a wonderful, wonderful villain character. And, you know, reading that, as you would have in 2006 and 7, again, 2000 AD has hit the button when it comes to, in some ways, not predicting the future, but looking at and saying, this is the kind of stuff that can happen if we allow it to. And I'm, of course, referring to somebody who's rather orange and lives in the White House.
Yes.
For me personally, I make that connection stronger now. I don't want to say names here because, you know, who knows who's listening to this, whether you're happy and we can discuss that particular person. I don't know if that's a popular conclusion these days, but obviously it wasn't at the time. I mean, you know, so many political figures have appeared in 2000 AD from the shooting of a certain yet to be prime minister on the steps of St. Paul's in Prog 1, Prog 2 in Invasion.
Yep.
Which, if the listener doesn't know, that's Pat Mills having a little wag at a certain Mrs. Thatcher, to the fantastic, I can't remember the name of the story, but one of the funniest Strontium Dog stories, where obviously we have Adolf Hitler.
The Schicklgruber grab.
And later with Durham Red, we have Ronald Reagan. So we've got a long line. Yeah, that is a great, great story. This, of course, is somewhat more serious. There are lighter moments, but the overall tone is dark, and the overall tone is actually, it's important for the citizens of the Meg, but they will never know it. They will never know the background. This is a story that has been suppressed by the judiciary for as long as they could through Goodman and we learn through other chief judges, where insofar as Fargo's wishes, his supposed dying wishes were, that the judges literally held power for some time, a short period of time, he imagined. And as we appreciate, that didn't happen. The judges have, and we find out how, and we think why, the judges have taken over. And Judge Dredd becomes privy to this information, as we do the reader. And it's just one of those things, again, which just helps build up him, his character, his psyche. But obviously there is a fantastic array of other characters in it, each given space to really kind of live and breathe. But for me personally, it is an inquiry into the thoughts and the way of thinking that Judge Dredd is able to value his work and the place of the judges in the city. And of course, you know, he's been wearing tight boots for a considerable time, and he has to take on this mission, and it's just fantastic. It really took me to places that I didn't think were going to come. So the story itself, it's a 15-year-old story, but for someone who's not read it, I don't want to give away too much, but I would really say go out, get a copy of it. It's a fantastic read, and make your own mind up whether you think the judges are doing the right thing or not. And Wagner really leaves that open for the reader to come to their own conclusions.
It's excellent stuff. Let me take you back then. So we start, as you say, with the John Wagner and Kev Walker story, The Connection, a marvellous little sort of gritty future noir tale of some mutants trying to smuggle something important into Mega City One. And it's all dark night and rain-washed streets and rain cloaks. takes me back to when I think Wagner and Walker did Mandroid, which I had on the podcast a long time ago with Steve Green. And so it's a great little sort of gritty opener to set us off. And then, as you say, we get into the glories of John and Carlos back in sort of partnership again. And we find out what the mutants have brought in and why that's significant. And then we get Dredd leading a team out into the cursed earth. And he puts together one of his little teams that he's fond of doing from time to time with some of his regulars and his followers.
Yeah. Now, I'll be honest with you here, Eamon. Not really, as I said, having bought the progs prior to this for some time, those characters themselves, I wasn't necessarily aware really of the importance of a few of them. Obviously, Logan is a character which has developed, but the fact is that it's almost kind of like a cursed earth too, isn't it?
It's
an opportunity to go into the wasteland again on what is. It is a very important mission for them all. We don't know yet. But, of course, very soon Wagner doesn't just take us there. He then gives us the background to Joe and Rico, which I wasn't expecting at all, although the title of the book, Origins, it's an Origins on many levels. And we get absolutely, first row seats, really, in terms of how the boys develop and their early years. And obviously it irons out some of the inconsistencies, perhaps with some of the dates, which, some of the Judge Dredd fans were probably questioning over the years. There's a discrepancy of a few years, I believe, in terms of whether whether a judge is cloned and born at a 5-year-old or are they 13 with 5 years gestation. Is something I couldn't necessarily, discuss with somebody from here. It's kind of something that I'm not completely sure about. I don't know how you take that, Eamon, whether if someone was to ask you, whether you could explain it. But
I couldn't.
We get the background, and that is just brilliant. Because, of course, we see the development of so many things, don't we? We see the city. We see the timeline in terms of Booth. We see the building of the city, even down to the minutiae, of course, of the visors with the helmets and the weaponry and all the background stuff, which makes Judge Dredd just what it is, really. And I love the fact that maybe Wagner gave Carlos the nod to go back to his original thoughts and not necessarily concepts, but he gave, imagine it, Carlos and John, they invented his character some 30 years previously. And now they're given a chance through the editorial team in 2008 to say, right, reimagine, you know, give us more detail, give the readers what they really want. And with that, Wagner took another story and put it in there, which is the origins of the judges. And it just works so well. So that's, I've just got love for it. I think you can tell I'm fairly, fairly keen on the whole thing. But I read it as a one piece. I wish I had that time machine. I wish I could go back to 2006, you know, be buying those progs weekly. It must have been amazing to pick it up week by week, you know, because on 5 or 6 pages, taking you to a point, you know, waiting 6 or 7 days for the next one to come and then seeing the story develop. I mean, that is what comics do best. But as a graphic novel, as a trade paperback, to read it in, you know, a slab of time, two hours maybe, something like that, is a real, real privilege. And I've got to say, probably of all the Judge Dredd stories, the larger sagas or you know, collected stories, I've got to say probably Origins is the one that I've reread second only to Cursed Earth. It's, you know, it's that for me is the absolute, you know, definition of what a great Judge Dredd story is. And if it's what, 25, 26 episodes long, that for me goes with the length of the great stories like Necropolis, and obviously the Apocalypse War and many others. So, you know, it's just brought it up to date. And I cannot believe it's now, you know, coming up to 12 years old, 12, 13 years old story. Yeah. It's incredible how things move on, isn't it? But I think it's a bookmark for Dredd, and it really places him in a time and a place again and reestablished. And obviously for 2018, maybe Prog 1500, an important milestone again. Maybe, you know, those readers and listeners who don't know is that, you know, 2000 AD used to sell, what, 150,000-200,000 copies. And it certainly wasn't selling that much when this story came out. But I'd imagine it's probably one of the most highly sold reprinted Judge Dredd stories, and it deserves to be. So it's really very important for that reason. But it's just a great read, isn't it?
It is. It's terrific stuff. It does sort of divide in a way into Dredd and his team's continuing adventures in the Cursed Earth, while Dredd's also filling in the other judges on some of the background. And then, of course, we get the fabulous flashback sequences of young Joe and Rico, basically still in the academy, but, you know, been put in the front line because of the way things are going in America. Did you have a particular preference between those two parts of the story as to which ones you would have been most keen to see in next week's prog?
Okay, I would say as I read them, I was more fascinated in discovering the early Megacity, the, you know, Joe and Rico's background, really. I mean, I guess there's other stories which in part cover that, and really this isn't the only look at that period of time, but it's certainly something which I think needed to be done by Wagner, and to have Carlos doing it as well is just such a privilege, really, for the reader. I really thought it gave us quite an insight into the difference between, obviously, the two lines of the clone brothers, you know, perhaps explaining the failings in other clones later on through the series. You know, Rico is going to fail, and we're given hints and clues about that. And Joe isn't without necessarily fault, in terms that, you know, he is unthinking. He's not an unthinking automaton. You know, he's very much a human being. But for him, I think it shows where the discipline comes from. It shows where the upholdance of the law and his understanding of almost the privilege of being a judge, what it really means. So, yeah, that for me was the thread that really was for me the hook. And obviously, seeing how this incredible story is going to come, you know, and come to a conclusion was fascinating in itself. But, you know, there's a realization with most Dredd fans is that generally speaking, Dredd comes out on top. But the conclusion and how Wagner allows you to consider perhaps where we're going next, I think was really important. You know, we've got other stories which follow from this. So the fact is that in terms of some of the characters who reappear or we're introduced to, I mean, I mentioned my fascination with regards to the link with the cursed earth. You know, the fact is that we know where Judge Dredd stands with regards to the issue around mutants. And the timeline is, you know, there's been laws passed outlawing them and then reintroducing them into the city, dependent on who the chief judge is at the time. But the fact is that Joe is actually related to a whole bunch of them, isn't he?
And of course, he meets them for the first time in this story, the Fargos. And I mean, there is that line as they ride back to the city at the end of the, you know, without giving too much away, but at the end of the book.
Yeah.
And one of the judges says they won't be allowed to visit you in Mega City One. And Dredge says, well, perhaps we need to change that or something like that. You know, there may be time for a change.
That's right.
This would lead on to the Mutants in Mega City One storyline and then to Tour of Duty and the real shift in Dredd's world back at Mega City One.
Absolutely. And obviously, you know, where we are now in terms of how other creators have taken the aspects and the threads of this storyline. You know, I'm actually one of those people that is very open to other writers being involved. You know, and there have been periods of time, of course, that John Wagner was not involved. And, you know, he's got other interests as well. And, for example, I'm going to be, you know, referring to, for example, Year One by Mike Carroll, which I think is a great series, and the other, you know, the other years that follow that. I very much enjoyed them. But the fact is that I think a lot of work comes back now to this and the continuum which has been set up, and the fact is it must be almost a nerve-wracking experience as a writer to take on board a Judge Dredd story where you're referring to the timeline or the incidences before, and I'm sure there's a whole editorial team behind who enable a writer who may not know every nook and cranny of 40 years of lore. But, you know, I think the fact is that it certainly opened a door into how we can look at the judges, how we can look at the timeline. And obviously, you know, the Meg itself, the magazine was obviously needing pages to be filled as well. So we've got new lines which have opened up, and obviously characters who, you know, in their own rights are worthy of their own stories and their own backgrounds, and that's as it should be, really. Judge Dredd is that creation which allows a good writer to explore many different themes. But I think John Wagner, if it was, I'm sure for him, whether he felt it was like an opus that, you know, if there's one thing again he wanted to be marked at was, or judged against, was, you know, the standard of this piece of work. And it just holds up. It's just a great piece of writing work. And Carlos is just, you can tell they had a special connection. Yes. And that they obviously had been there from the very beginning, in the way that both of them are able to put the humour into it when there's space to do so. You know, the chins are just great, aren't they? Fargo's chins, the comparison between all of them. You know, there are lighter moments with the mutants, but there are some fairly dark and fairly violent parts to the book as well, which we do clamour for with Judge Dredd. So, you know, the fact is that you can read 20 pages of this book, and within those 20 pages, there's different styles of storytelling going on. And I think that is just the mark of an absolute, you know, top class writer. And Carlos, he's using different styles as well. You know, there's a lot of background work which is from original kind of, you know, photographs which is rendered, and he's used different techniques on some of the splashes, are slightly different than his usual style, I would say. you know, he's moved on. It's got that fully painted feel, hasn't it? And I'll be honest with you, Eamon, I don't know whether did Carlos actually paint this or was it coloured? It's not a colour.
I believe
it's a colour story, is it? It's all Carlos's work.
I think it's all Carlos's work, but I think it's in his digital colouring period, I think.
Sure. But, you know, to have that opportunity, and again, I mean, like I said, I'm reading a version which is ever so slightly reduced in scale, but you don't lose any of the intensity of some of those pages. And the way that, for example, several of the pages are just given to one image, and the way that Carlos is given room to really explore some images and to have some really large impact pages is just fantastic. So, you know, there's so much there for a budding artist to look at and really, you know, you could take a lot from this. I've got a real problem when it comes to the question that you'll be asking shortly on Grail pages. you know, I've got a book here. It's got about six post-it notes poking out of it.
well, we'll get to that in a moment.
I've chosen them for different reasons, but, and also I also like the fact that the all the panel pages and the edging is all in black as well. It really gives the work a kind of a closed in feel, you know. I don't think they often did that in the earlier progs on, well, certainly when it was on the toilet paper kind of newsprint paper, you know, it was all white backgrounds, but this is given a much, much more up to date feel really in terms of how the medium had moved on. And I think Carlos is really pays a nod to certain things, but he also really has allowed his work to develop in some of the way he was doing his colouring and the way that, you know, has some of the techniques, the digital techniques. I'm just looking at a panel, for example, where the judges are sitting. I think it's in the White House, and there's just a window. It's nothing serious at all, but you got a sun glare coming through that window, you know. And it's a breakdown of the frame there where the window frame is just lightened, and you get, you know, it's just his detail in terms of a light source, you know, and how it affects the page. Other artists, they may have picked up on that, but he looks like he takes such care with almost every panel, you know, and it's just, he never misses a trick. All of the techniques that we love him for are there. Apart from, and I'm looking, I don't see too many of his famous black splodges on the outlines. He seems to have dropped the black splodges on this one. Maybe someone might correct me, but you know, they're more kind of crisp lines around everything in his early work. I can see some of the panels have the sort of splodge effect where he's
around the judges' helmets. Yeah.
But you know, that's not a problem at all. It's clear, still clearly, evidently Carlos's work, and it's just the colours as well. I mean, I've got a page here and opening another one. It goes from some incredible purples to pinks to greens. You know, each panel's giving its own colour reference. It's just absolutely fantastic. And I can certainly tell you, after we finish this, I'm going to be reading it again.
Excellent stuff. It's a masterclass by Carlos. You know, rest in peace, dear Carlos. It's a wonderful tribute
to him. Absolutely.
I mean, because you're sort of spoilt for choice as to which Carlos volume to hand to a newbie.
Yeah.
You know, it could be Necropolis, it could be The Apocalypse War.
I mean, not judging them against each other, but Necropolis for me, I think that was his final painted version. I mean, I think Necropolis was possibly his final painted one. And some people say that the printing technology wasn't up to it, that the colours are slightly muddy, which was not on Carlos's palette. You know, it wasn't his choice there. It's just the printing technology. Whereas I would hope in the progs, I know we went to the glossy, they were full glossy progs, weren't they, from you know, by the time of prog 1500 and onwards. This work is given the attention to detail from the production team as well in terms of what it needed. You know, it's just crisp and clear, and you don't read it thinking, oh, I wish I had the original comics, as most people, if they buy the some of the editions, would say or be told, oh, it was better in the prog. You know, you should have seen it in the prog. Whereas this, I just think it's anyone picking up this and some of the later work is getting the real deal. And I actually, you know, hats off to Rebellion for investing in the printing quality and making sure that the production values were as high as they are, you know. And I think sometimes some people overlook that kind of issue, really. You know, they sort of perhaps only really talk about the creators, those people whose work is on the page, don't necessarily think about those people who go to produce the work on the page in terms of how it's going to be, you know, in the final copy or collected item or comic or whatever. So for me, I think it really is a very, very good example of, you know, the some of the latest work that was around at the time that Rebellion were really, I think, trying to make sure that they were bringing stuff to the fore. And maybe this kind of size trade paperback, we're saying, is it kind of more of an American style friendly kind of, you know, comic buyers size that your American comic buyer would be in. So I can see why they've chosen that size. Just it's just, you know, it's fascinating really to look through it. I mean, Kev Walker's work we were talking about earlier, I'm looking now, there's some differences there. He's got lighter backgrounds on some of the pages, some other panels. He's much more of a regular sort of geometric panelist in terms of how he lays out his pages, whereas Carlos, on some of them, the blending and where Dredd is in in the actual forefront of the action and what's going on behind him, it just shows a guy who is in his absolute top form. And we've said it several times, but you know, it's some of his finest work. And you know, any fan of Carlos, it's not an easy time for us at the moment, thinking that we're not going to get new work, but we have to appreciate what he's left us. And this is something that is for me, it's almost a grail book. You know, it's just something which is just so, there's everything so right about it that you know, I would find it hard to critique it, trying to find some issues with it. I haven't personally done that. And so it's just a great, great, great read.
Excellent stuff. So before we get to the fabulous Grail page game, Ben, I was going to ask you for sort of favourite moments from this book, which you've described as a sort of Grail book anyway. It's just, you know, full of wonders. Is there any particular moments or parts of the story that really stand out to you and hit home?
I would say the page where Goodman is making the announcement, where we have the Constitution behind him. So it's single. It's almost a single.
Oh, I know what you mean. Yes, yeah. I've got it in front
now,
of me.
That could stand out as a Grail page anyway. But the point is that what we have from the mouth of the chief judge at that time, the reasoning behind the judge is taking over. He's just come from a conversation, or he's having a conversation with Fargo, with the I don't think they're the Council of Five, because there seem to be more than that sitting around the table. But we're talking really about the fact that they're going to be given the president the ultimatum that he either resigns or surrenders. Okay. And this is a crucial, crucial time. And the background of that is we've got a bombed out city. We've got evidence of the total war which led to this moment, the atomic wars. And that, for me, is a part of the story and the conversations between Fargo and his council, where we see that things are not necessarily as they should be, that there are, depending on the conversation between the judges, depending on how it goes, that we know what's going to come next. And he's appealing, and Goodman is appealing to the citizens. On the next page, they call on the military. He says, "I call on the military to pledge allegiance to the new authority." So we start off where we have the police involved, and they've gone. We're talking about the judges taking over every facet of running this city. And it's just, we're watching, and he is, Booth, I'm looking at him, in some panels, so he's a little bit thinner. He's wearing that famous red tie, that very long red tie that someone who's in the Red House, or the White House at the moment, wears. We just start to see Joe and Rico discussing their place in all of this. And it leads to a page which I'll be discussing in a short while. But for me, their conversation, they're talking about the fact is, Rico asks Dredd, what would you give old Booth? And Dredd says, sentence, you mean? A bullet between the eyes. That's what I'd give him. And in that conversation, that bit there, you know, even as how old are they? They're 12 years old here, 13 years old. These boys, they are absolutely the new, they're the new juggles. The things have changed. And Booth's corruption, he is corrupt. And he's hanging on to power, and he's just shot a whole load of, or he's had the military shooting a whole load of the citizenry outside the White House. And you get the feeling that from this, we kind of understand why it was the judges who were given or entrusted with the control of the city. So for me, it's that sequence there as the background to how we all end up, you know, Prog 2, 2099, first page, Judge Dredd, you know, those opening stories and onwards from there, how we got there. And that, for me, is why I've chosen that particular sequence of pages.
Fantastic. That's wonderful moments. I'm just going to go with the sort of John Wagner and his history with Dredd. So this is the idea that over the year, he's created this infallible judge who has absolute belief. And that Wagner just has decided, I'm going to keep tapping away at that. I'm going to sort of make some dents in that. And the last page of this collection, where Hershey asks Dredd what Fargo said to him, and we know that Dredd is lying, and Carla sort of hones in on the chin, and you can just sort of tell that Dredd again has got doubts.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Whereas the line he was told by Fargo, is it we're the monsters? Does he say that? Is it?
Yes. It was never meant to be forever.
Absolutely. He's begging him. He says, I'm asking you, begging you, my flesh, my blood. It's not too late. Fix it, Joe. You and Rico, you can do it. And that is just, yeah, we know that Rico won't fix it. And who knows? I mean, if Wagner wants to write another long story looking at this again, perhaps he'll take it further. You know, it's certainly left there in the balance, isn't it? And from that point, maybe we understand more about Dredd and Hershey's relationship. That's obviously something, as you're talking about those, he gets together a small team again. Well, you know, we appreciate that Hershey was with him on the judge trials. So they've got a lot of history, and you get the feeling from that it's not over. So it's certainly left it, not a cliffhanger, but certainly left everyone thinking, well, I just wonder how they're going to move this forward and what will develop. And isn't that a great comic book story, which is continually asking you to say, reconsider it. What do you think? It's not as you always assume. And I think for that, John Wagner is one of my favourite writers, let alone, you know, comic book writers. I don't necessarily differentiate between the two. And John doesn't necessarily talk about Dredd so much these days. I've been lucky enough to interview him a couple of times. He tends to want to perhaps talk and understandably promote his new work, which is his right to do so. But he's always very generous with people with time and the questions they ask him and the conventions I've been to and such like. And I think he appreciates that Dredd isn't going to end with him. Dredd's going to continue. It's almost a public domain kind of character insofar as so many people who have never read 2000 AD have heard of or seen Judge Dredd or could describe to you who Judge Dredd is. And hats off to John, where I don't think he's putting into question that this is going to end. There could well be discussions in future years, and I hope not for a long time. But the story itself leaves you to wonder where the city is going to go, where the judge's place is now. So, yeah, that ends the book fantastically, doesn't it?
Okay, let's play the fabulous Grail page game. All this artwork is available, let's say.
Okay, we discussed in great detail the cover of Frog 1505, Bolland's cover. It's not a Grail page, I appreciate that. Okay. But that's one of my choices, okay, in terms of obviously the cover of the book. And that's not always the case, is it, with stories? But I've gone with, I think I only need to say one word, and everyone who knows the story would know it.
Excellent.
So it's the explosion page with regards to the assault that's taking place. Carlos just does the most amazing explosion, and there's rubble flying, and there are people cowering, and the lettering as well, whether that is original work or whether that was the some of the art editorial or Annie Parkhurst, not sure. But that is, for me, that's my page which stands out from that issue. It's almost as though Carlos went, I just want to do the biggest explosion. And he's done some big explosions in his time. You know, he's destroyed planets in his time, hasn't he, Carlos, with a push of a button, destroying planets and cities and such like. But that, for me, is my grill page, but followed by another page, which we said was Judge Goodman, standing in front of, or the backdrop being, the Constitution, the original fathers, you know, founding fathers' Constitution, is my second, for a very different reason. So one, you've got the immediate impact of the explosion, just you turn that page and it's just breathtaking. And the other page, much more insightful, much more detailed. You read it, it sinks in, it leads to other pages. So I'll start with two. I hope you're okay with that, Eamon.
Both excellent choices, and we shall award those to you in the Grail Pages Gallery. I'm going to choose from a few pages after your Goodman page, page 132 in the digital collection, and it's the scene of the two cadets, Joe and Rico, as the government troops sort of start to paradrop from the overhead ships. And it's just a wonderful single-page splash, which I love that.
That sky colour, yeah. I mean, you know, obviously the design of the ships themselves, but that sky colour, Joe and Rico's positioning there, and that lovely, it's a kind of triangular-shaped panel at the bottom of the page with the gunfire. You know, they've got to dodge the bullets, get through a door. It's just brilliant. It's brilliant. And we see a drop, don't we? A lovely word bubble there. It's Dread who's gives him it, says Drock, and there are hundreds of these attack troops coming down. Yeah, absolutely. I was definitely in the running there, Eamon, so that's a top choice as well.
And I will post all of these Grail pages on the Twitter, the Instagram, the Facebook, and the 2000 AD forum. So that's going to wrap up our discussion of the book. Origins is available from the 2000 AD store for $15.99 in hard copy or $9.99 digital. It was issue 4 of the Hachette Mega Collection, but is now out of print, although you will find hardback copies if you want one on eBay, I'm sure. So you can get a hold of it. And as we've said, as Ben, I think, has said, it's one of the cornerstones of 40 years of Dread, particularly as told by Wagner and Carlos. It's a grail book, Ben.
It is indeed. It is indeed. And yeah, I appreciate the chance I've had to give my kind of reasons as why I chose it. And if I went down the pub with somebody, I'd be pretty much enthusing just as I have here. And I necessarily wouldn't lend my only copy, but let's put it this way. If I had a friend who hadn't read it, I would be lending it them so they could read it.
Excellent. So, Ben, it's guest projects time. We're having a few Skype connection problems, but I'm going to let you tell us the background to the 1977-2000 AD group, particularly how you came up with the idea for the group and the sort of ethos behind it. And then perhaps go on and tell us what's been happening in the group recently, Ben.
Sure. The group was formed in 2007. I think, like a lot of people, maybe started looking in on Facebook at the time. I only just joined the place there. And it seemed naturally for me that, you know, I wanted to sort of rabbit on with people about what some stuff that I was into. I wasn't at the time reading 2000 AD, and I think it's a name adjusted, and it has had a name change, Eamon. It started off as 1977, 2000 AD to the present. And I kind of, after a couple of years, 3 or 4 years, I wasn't really doing an awful lot with it. But about 3 years ago, I completely kind of kick-started it again, got on board a team of people with me. I was obviously starting to use the Facebook sort of page a little bit more. And the ethos has always been one where we kind of, yes, we stayed with the original in terms of the continuing sort of 2000 AD group. But for me, it's about its friendliness. It's about the fact that we really like to share, and we really support anyone involved or anybody who wants to kind of get involved 2000 AD and such like. I mean, we've got new creators on board. We've got people who are just breaking through. You know, we've got artists who have really, I think they're just amazing people who want to share onto our page. We try and always be original. We're very happy for people to share onto our page, but what we don't try and do is just literally look around the net and just take other people's stuff. We like to have our own product on there. So I think people are really kind of hooked onto that. We've had this last year, we've had some really kind of, for us, defining promotions and features and stuff, but insofar as our ethos, it's about our friendliness. It's about our kind of wanting to be there for people who themselves are trying to themselves, you know, show what they're up to. It's not the only group I run. I have another one called Helmets of 2000 AD, which I set up with John Farrelly 2 years ago, and that's where, for example, Steve Green, Ian Suter, all the dreadheads, all the cosplayers, they put some of their stuff up there. It's a bit funnier, it's not so serious a page, and I've got several others as well. I don't necessarily kind of cross-fertilize them, but I've got an action page as well, and I've got one which was the biggest one I've got. It's got a few thousand members. It's called World's Weirdest and Worst Comic Book Covers. It's something which is much, much more popular in America, it would seem. You know, I look into the details of who the membership. We've got 1,000 members on 2000 AD. They all pretty much participate, and we've got mostly UK, European, and some small amount of worldwide fans involved. But generally speaking, yeah, we want to give something back as well. So we do our own promotions. We've had some really kind of cool opportunities where we did a big Christmas promotion, giveaway competition. And if I might at this point, Eamon, I would like actually to personally thank a few people who have been very kind. So if that's okay.
Yeah, fire away.
Thank you very much. So, yeah, this is going out to some people who have provided prizes. We had a competition through December, like a bit of a an advent calendar, if you like, the Dreadmas, Christmas Dreadmas 2018. So, for example, Shane Chesby at ICE gave away some VIP tickets, and we've got some lucky people who are going to be taking part. And obviously not just the day, but there's an after convention party as well. Sue Hatchell at Lawless as well has provided tickets for some dreadheads to go down and see what I think is personally the best Judge Dread convention. I went last year to Lawgiver 4. Absolutely amazing. Met some amazing people. And it was a great opportunity to get up personally and close with, you know, The Biz, for example, and Chris Langley, and a whole bunch. My mom was there, and all my favourites were there, which was fantastic. We also got a lot of prints and artwork in. Dave Hitchcock provided a fantastic Dread original piece of artwork he did. I gave away a Prog 1. It was a reading copy, but, you know, that was kind of cool. And we also had gifts which people couldn't, you know, money doesn't buy. So we don't sell our T-shirts, and I need to make this really clear now, anyone from Rebellion listening. We have some promo T-shirts, and we give them away. It's got the old style 2000D logo on, and, you know, about 20 lucky people. And anyone who contributed got the T-shirts as well. So if you happen to see someone with a 1977 to 2000D T-shirt, you can't buy them. We've still got a few left. If you want to write to me, you know, pay for postage, that's all you've got to do. We might give them away, but I'll generally be giving them away at the conventions this year. So that's something we did in Christmas, and it was just so much fun to do. We got a lot of involvement. And right now, or should I say, in February, we've had the special inaugural Golden Squirrel Awards in honor of Carlos. Apparently, the saying says that when Carlos was introducing himself to someone from the editorial team or another artist or another writer, they couldn't get his name. So they thought he said Squirrel rather than Squirrel. And the name kind of stuck. And Dave Healy, this is his baby. He's running the inaugural God Squirrel. And people have been judging or voting for favorite writers through. We split the periods of time from 77 to 98 and then 99 to 19. Favorite artists over the period of time, favorite stories and such like. And we've had a massive amount of response. And of course, some of the conversations have been very heated, you know, people wondering why such and such an artist or writer didn't get involved. That ended on February the 22nd. So I don't, if you don't know yet, you can go back to the group and see who won. And we've got lots of plans in the future, really. So we've just started on Twitter, Eamon. So I think it's, you find the link on the page itself. And we're wondering whether we're going to continue and try and build a relationship with Rebellion. I mean, obviously things are bubbling there. Great news about, you know, the new Rogue Trooper film. And obviously we're all waiting to see what happens now in Oxford at the film studios. Where are they filming? Have they yet started the new Mega City 1 series? There's a lot of interest in that. Obviously, you know, we respect the fact that this, all this work is someone's intellectual property. And, you know, we don't necessarily promote or condone people selling products on our pages. So we're not a selling page. We're very much a sharing page of original items, or we get permissions or credit. But one of the things that we have done, which I've set up, is in honor of basically all the artists and the writers and the editors we could find who sadly have left us. We've got a page which is called They Served. And, you know, it starts from some of the earliest people we lost, Bernardo Lely, through to, unfortunately, Carlos and recently Ron Smith. And unfortunately, that list will continue to grow. But it's our way of showing our respect to those people who have created the thing that we all love. And I think really respect is something that I think holds us apart as well. We really manage our group quite tightly. We say we're friendly. We don't like people feeling that it's not a place that they can talk honestly, but it's not in the negative. We're not allowing people to put other people down, and contributors who put their stuff up. I really respect the fact that they're, you know, asking people their opinions, and we hope it's all a positive experience for everyone. So that's what we've been doing. And I'm really happy to talk about what we'll be doing in the future, Raymond. So
yes, please. Yeah, I mean, I would say that 1977 to 2000 AD Facebook group is a very friendly place. I had Dave Healy on talking about it. But yeah, do tell us what's coming up in the future.
Okay. So we're going to be running a good old-fashioned... I kind of like the idea of the letters page from the original pages when I was a lad in 2000 AD. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe we'll print up some galactic groats. I believe Kev O'Neill did a particularly nice version of them. Again, it's IP of somebody else's. But no, we'd like to run some art competitions. We've done some previously for the original David Hitchcock work of Carlos. We've used some very, very poignant and great pieces of work to promote our tribute to Carlos. But we're going to be having a Judge Dredd art competition. We're not necessarily sure of the format of that. So by the time this podcast comes out, we would have decided on what the format. It might be stories. It might just be one-offs. But we're certainly going to be asking people. And we're really kind of keen on people who have maybe put down the pen and the pencils for a while, when I have another go at it. Or our younger, the younger and the more talented members or friends of the group, we just want to send their stuff in, really, and just use it as a bit of a gallery opportunity. As I said, we really love the fact that people seem to want to contribute. And as I said, we're all about original material. So, yeah, at the end of March and onwards through to Easter, we'll be running a big art competition. And obviously, what we will be doing through the year as well, we love the idea of promoting the conventions that have come out. So I'm going to be promoting Lawless with Sue Hadrill. I'm going to be down at the event. I'm going to be hopefully producing a live podcast, taking lots of footage, interviews, and such like, and putting it through the group. Really giving people opportunity if they can't make it to go to that. And we're just trying to get out and about really, and meet up with people. So it's just about really pushing the brand a little bit more, insofar as maybe we won't just be on Facebook. We'll be looking to do some other things. Who knows, maybe a bit of YouTube. I mean, you mentioned Dave Healy. I'd like to say a big hi to Dave. Dave was kind enough to help me about over a year ago. I made him an admin as well. The work was getting a little bit on top of me there. We've got a fantastic moderator team. So it's a hi to Steve Bull and Pete and Chris McCauley as well over in Canada. Chris has just started off. He's doing some colouring work for Judge Dredd. He's also been involved with, I think we can say this now, Pat Mills, on a new product that they're working on together. And he's also working with John Charles. And John Charles I've met up with John, and he's got a new product out as well. Recommend, if you've not had him on the podcast, maybe you contact him. So he's been doing some great work. He's reasonably well known with the 2000 AD creators. He's done several pages, covers and such like. I intend to do some work with him as well. I'm going to be bringing out my own. I don't know what we're going to call it yet, whether it's going to be a feature comic, demo, such like, but I'm working with several people trying to get together something. Whether it has the 1977-2000 AD name, I'm not sure. I think that is something quite different. But I just like to say that being involved and with people who, you know, write and draw and think about this thing has really spurred me on to continue. I mean, I've never been published as such in terms of 2000 AD. My background, if anybody wants to know, I teach design. I also was an animator when I was a young man. Yeah, maybe in the background there, it's one of those things that I kind of wish I'd done, you know? And this is sort of, this alleviates a scratch, you know, it helps me deal with it. But it's a hard thing, I guess, to hold down a job and be creative at the same time and to give yourself the time to do these things. But just being involved on a daily or weekly basis with some people really spurs me on. And I just want to, as I said, I want our group to be somewhere that people can go, you know what? We can ask people what they think about my stuff, and is it okay if I promote it and put it up? And that's absolutely fine with us. You know, we want to see that, you know, our pages are, as I said, original, good content, and we're not just taking from other places. So this might be shocking to you, Eamon, but I'm not actually a member of any other 2000 AD group. I don't know what's being printed elsewhere. I know there's great work being done, but generally speaking, most of those people running those pages, they're in our group as well, so we get input from them. But I kind of think it's a genuinely happy family. Yeah, it's, you know, people are very generous, and most of the time we have no trouble at all. So I just like to take this opportunity to thank all of the members really who supported us. And you know, if you're listening to this and you haven't logged in, try us out, and you know, we'll join you up, and we'd love to have you with us. So That's really what we're doing in the future. We're looking to build and to encourage more people to do so.
Ben, that's fantastic. All sorts of interesting stuff happening in the 1977 to 2000 AD Facebook group. So do check it out.
Eamon, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks ever so much. And I'm dreading listening to myself on your podcast, but I will give it a listen. And And thanks very much for the time that you've given us, given me to have a chat about what I'm up to. And again, just it's been a fantastic opportunity. So thank you.
It's been a pleasure, Ben. Thank you very much. We've had a few technical issues, which hopefully I can fix it. But anyway, thank you to everybody for listening to Mega City Book Club. Please like, subscribe and share in all the usual places. You can find the first podcast now on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, the 2080 forums, and on Spotify. And you can get in touch with me about any issues or any upcoming books you'd like to talk about at mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. And do check out the 1977 to 2080 Facebook group if you do the Facebook. It's the friendliest place to go. So until next time on Mega City Book Club, when we're passing judgment on another 2000 AD book, it's goodbye from me and...
It's goodbye from me.